Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, 7:06, the 13th day of March, hope you're well. Hope you have a good weekend. We did have our system offline. I do apologize for that. That's been rebooted and reset, so I think we're good to go here. And let me go over some of your big stories here. Republicans still battling each other even after gaining power. McCain is intensifying Trump tantrum. And my buddy Pete texted me yesterday and said that Trump was like, he reminded him of an old man that used to yell at him when he would walk on his property. New York Times, slowest transition in decades. Paul Ryan warning, if we don't pass my bill, system going to collapse. CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, doesn't like the new bill. Budget seeking historic federal workforce cuts. Now, they're trying to get what they're calling Obamacare light through. Paul Ryan is saying it doesn't work, and they need to do his. Now, Paul Ryan is a physician. He's an ophthalmologist, so an eye doctor. So he has some knowledge of the system. Paul Ryan is the only guy who did a budget for the last 8 years. And you'd think that he would know, but Paul Ryan is more, conservative than is, well, Paul Ryan is more liberal than Rand Paul, the two Pauls going against each other. And so, the issue is, it's a big deal, because if the Republicans have complained for 8 years about Obamacare and had no functional replacement, it makes them look incompetent. And all right, so blizzard warning for New York City, up to 2 feet coming in some of those places, 2 feet of snow at once. U.S. deploying attack drones to South Korea. Japanese warship sailing to the South Sea. They have an ongoing dispute with China. Trump doing what Obama never did. Trump is allowing people into his office, and apparently Obama did not let people in any kind of meaningful way go into his office or come into his residence, which Trump is doing all the time. So looking for any other stories that you might find notable here, giving you some headlines. Is Scotland still looking for independence? Texas state representative proposes fines for masturbation. This is actually a joke bill made to make fun of closing down the abortion clinics in Texas, which is pretty sad when you think of it. And looking for anything else here. Many foreign tourists say they're afraid to visit USA. And Spicer ambushed an Apple store. He was actually very polite, and the lady was filming him. She came up and complained against him, and he said, well, basically, thank God we're living in this kind of a country. I'm almost tempted to get into this, these stories here, getting into populism, and maybe that'd be an interesting way to spend an hour. Las Cruces and Mesilla Valley come up short in title games. According to the Sun News, an upset-filled state tournament ended with number 12 seed Volcano Vista. Winning the Class 6A state championship, they beat number 2 Las Cruces 47-39 in Saturday's state championship. Greg had called about that. This was at the Pit in Albuquerque. I mean, you want to talk about an up-and-coming team there. So, number 12 taking the first, you know, taking the championship. And the Bulldogs won a difficult District 3-6A tournament championship, and head coach William Benjamin's club returns all but two seniors from a team that finished 27-5. And Benjamin said, "I thought we could get this game this year. They didn't exceed my expectations. I know we're young, but I thought we could get here this year if we came together and did a great job coming." And they did a great job coming together. The kids stepped up and did a tremendous job. So hats off. We've always got these great sports teams, and I wonder why our sports teams seem to perform better, generally speaking, than Albuquerque. All right, let me go through my list of stories here. You know what? I think what I'm going to do is I might play a little bit on the wiretap story, but I think I want to get into this populism, maybe do it for a couple of days. I've found so many interesting stories, the history of populism. Let's take a break here. 7:12 a.m. Las Cruces AM 1450, 523-1450, and 805-6180 to text. You're listening to KOBE with Kelly O'Connell. But you don't see too many faces coming in out of the rain and hear the jazz go down. All right, looking at some stories here that were had to do with the wiretap, of course. So, and the claim that basically there's a couple of stories here that are tied together. These Democrats are insisting that there was a connection between Trump and Russia. That has proven to be false, of course. And also that there was wiretapping to two different issues, but related in some people's minds. So let me just play you what I have. I tried to get some stuff that was off the beaten path just a little bit for you so it wouldn't be redundant. And you just start off here by with this interesting, maybe the most surprising claim here, that Hillary Clinton met with the Russian ambassador. Hillary Clinton's election team met with the Russian ambassador, according to the Kremlin, which means that it's no big deal if somebody from the Trump transition team did as well.
This is his job. He was talking about bilateral relations. He was talking about what is going on in the United States, so we have a better understanding in Moscow. This is what is being performed by every ambassador of Russia abroad, every ambassador of the United States abroad, including in Moscow. Because the more ambassador talks to people in his country of residence, the better job he does.
Did he have similar meetings with Clinton campaign officials? Because I don't know of any.
Well, if you look at some people connected with Hillary Clinton during her campaign, you would probably see that he had lots of meetings of that kind. But there were no meetings about electoral process.
That is Putin's spokesman, Mal. You might say, well, it's his spokesman. I really, really don't believe him. Where did this idea come from? Where did the claim come from? Came from the left. It came from the Democrats who were trying to discredit Trump before he even began. Now, here is the question of Rand Paul saying there's a very good chance Trump was eavesdropped on by Obama administration.
This claim the president made about being wiretapped as a candidate by President Obama, they say this is too incendiary to wait for the committees to adjudicate it, that the president should bring forward whatever evidence he has. Does that bother you, matter to you?
Well, I think the first thing to realize is that I think everybody's been getting the story wrong. I doubt that Trump was a target directly of any kind of eavesdropping, but I'm not saying it didn't happen. I think there's a very good chance it does. I don't have any special information, but the way it works is the FISA court, through Section 702, wiretaps foreigners and then listens to Americans. It's a backdoor search of Americans. And because they have so much data, they can type Donald Trump into their vast resources of people they're tapping overseas, and they get all of his phone calls. And so they did this to President Obama. They 1,227 times eavesdrops on President Obama's phone calls. Then they mask him. But here's the problem, and General Hayden said this the other day. He said even low-level employees can unmask the caller. That's probably what happened to Flynn. They're not targeting Americans. They're targeting foreigners, but they're doing it purposefully to get to Americans.
Okay, so your point is the president would have been caught in a net, or excuse me, candidate Trump caught in a net but not targeted directly.
Or his associates, but it's very dangerous because they're revealing that now to the public.
All right, thank you, Senator. We ran out of time.
All right, so what if Obama had been part of this thing? Here's a little clip on that.
By the Obama administration during the race for the White House.
Yep, the shocking allegation spurring hasty denials from the former president and intel officials. But if true, what sort of legal trouble could they face?
We have called in Fox News senior judicial analyst Judge Andrew Napolitano, who's got a headline, and the headline is, the president of the United States, if he wanted to, Barack Obama, he could order a wiretap.
Absolutely. If Donald Trump wanted to, he could surveil anybody. That's directly in the FISA statute, which after laying out a lot of detailed procedures about what the NSA is supposed to do, says literally, notwithstanding all of the above, the president of the United States may on his own conduct surveillance or order surveillance of any person in the United States upon the filing of a certification with the Attorney General, of course, works for the president. Mm-hmm. So the idea that it was illegal for Barack Obama to listen to the phone calls and in-person conversations of Donald Trump is wrong. It, in my view, is immoral and profoundly unconstitutional and utterly wrong, but it's lawful because Congress has said it is lawful. This is power that was given to every president from Jimmy Carter up to and including Donald Trump.
It's still Judge, I don't think the power was intended to spy on your political enemy.
Well, of course not. Of course not. But the language is so broad that it would authorize it. So the last thing in the world the intelligence community wants is an investigation by the Congress, which will expose how truly pervasive spying is, how the intelligence community captures everything we say on our mobile devices,
everything.
Every time we touch a key on our mobile devices, on our desktops, every conversation on landline, every piece of data that goes across any fiber in the United States, into or out of the United States, is captured digitally by the NSA. The NSA is in the military. So the president tells the military, I need the conversation Trump had with Kilmeade in Trump Tower. He'll have it in a few minutes.
Well, let me ask you this. When James Clapper came out and said, I'm National Intelligence Director, if somebody wiretapped the Trump Tower, I would know about it, and it didn't happen.
He actually didn't say it that way. He chose his words very carefully.
Semantic.
He said, if somebody got a FISA warrant for this, I would know about it. The president doesn't need a FISA warrant because the statute authorizes the president to bypass FISA. And quite frankly, Brian, we are all skeptical of anything James Clapper says because he lied under oath, and we all know that.
Right.
When Senator Wyden asked him, is the NSA spying on tens or hundreds of millions of Americans? And he answered no. Senator Wyden knew the answer was yes. General Clapper knew the answer was yes. They gave him a chance to correct the answer, and he didn't do it.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? One week, the Democrats like Comey. The next week, the Republicans like him.
Yes. Now, he's caught in the middle of this because in his perception of what President Trump tweeted, the FBI has been tarnished. The FBI doesn't use FISA. The FBI has a very, very small intelligence unit. The vast majority of what the FBI does is investigate crimes.
Sure.
They need a warrant. Because if you gather evidence without a warrant, the courts are not going to hear it. If you gather evidence with a warrant, then it's competent evidence in a trial.
So you doubt that Comey actually came across through this unnamed source to the New York Times that was published on Sunday night. We all saw it on Monday, that said that there was no surveillance of Trump Tower?
By the FBI.
Yeah.
By the FBI. Right. The FBI wouldn't be in the business of surveilling Trump Tower unless they thought crimes were going on in there.
If there is an investigation, and it does come out that President Obama was wiretapped.
When you have sinus pressure,
I think nothing legal is going to happen. I think the political earthquake would destroy whatever legacy Barack Obama has. That, as Steve said at the outset of this conversation, he did it for the most base and venal reasons, to tarnish a political opponent.
Right.
This power is so extraordinary. It's only supposed to be used to secure the United States of America as a sovereign entity. It's not supposed to be used to torment your political opponents.
You know, so there's going to be an investigation. The president wants an investigation.
Yes.
All they really need is a whistleblower.
Yes,
right?
They do.
If you're a whistleblower, you're watching right now, you know what happened if something happened. What do they do? Do they go to the IG of the DOJ or something
like that?
That's
exactly what they do. Well, they go to the IG, the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community. The Intelligence Community, which consists of 16 known intelligence entities in the federal government and probably a few unknown, has an Inspector General who has a procedure for whistleblowers.
That way they get protection.
I can almost assure you that if this is a thorough and complete investigation, you will see whistleblowers, perhaps behind a screen, testifying
on
our screen,
you know,
before these committees.
What's so interesting is, in listening to you disseminate this, like, I've no one's ever broken it down like this before. If Donald Trump is listening to his daily briefing or reading it, and he's hearing things that only someone would know if they knew him or tapped phone conversations, that would conclude him to believe that someone had to be tapping phones in the Trump organization, which makes you wonder who had that power. Goes back to the president.
He gets an you're exactly right. He gets an intelligence briefing every morning. He knows more about this than any of us do. And one of them could very well have said, by the way, your predecessor was listening to those conversations you had with Kilmeade and Ducey and Ainslie and Napolitano and everybody else that met with him.
So he tweets it out at 6 and plays Alpha 7.
Correct.
Do you think it happened? Do you think he was wiretapped?
Yes.
something happened.
Yes, I do.
And the reporters aren't in trouble per se. It's whoever leaked them the stuff.
Correct. All the stuff, once it's leaked, is lawful to to print. The leaker is the person
in trouble. Why do you think it happened?
For the reasons Steve has articulated, I think they concluded by the end of or the middle of October that Mrs. Clinton was going down, and they wanted to see if there was a way to prevent, to stop her fall and to prevent his rise, and they didn't find it.
Wow. Thanks so much, Judge. Appreciate it.
Great analysis. And a cup coming out there, number one, Obama wouldn't need any warrant to tap anybody because that's part of his powers. Number two, that it's quite likely that Trump was wiretapped. We know for a fact that the wiretap tapping, everybody's wiretapped. I mean, everybody's conversations are recorded, and they're saved by NSA. So technically, you don't have to prove anything. What they're trying to prove is whether there was a special wiretap that went after the president. Now, all they'd have to do is wiretap somebody in the organization, and as soon as they mention Trump's name, which is a given within probably the first 5 minutes or first 5 seconds, that they could go after him without a continuing or another warrant. So we know that he was tapped. Question is, what happened to the information? And with the Democrats claiming that there was collusion between the Trump organization and Russia. I mean, the Democrats basically brought this on themselves by doing that and making such a big deal out of it. I mean, what did they think was going to happen? So we'll take a break right here. 728 Kelly O'Connell, AM Los Cruces, 523 1450 and 805-6180. Congratulations to Las Cruces. Almost made it at the state championship, but we're in the finals.
Competition in other places, but the horns, they blowing that sound way on down south, way on down south, London town.
Well, I wanted to get a little, a teeny tiny definition of populism for you, and I'm still looking for that. I probably listened to 20 different clips last night on it, and okay, so I mean, let me see, I probably got 20 of them right here, but I want to make sure that I believe I had one that was very brief, but it's proving elusive.
As did two other political groups.
All right. So I'll give you a little bit of history that'll kind of prime the pump for tomorrow. I'll get into populism and Jackson and this connection between them and Trump that I think you'll find fascinating. Here's a little historical statement on populism, which was an actual movement, political movement, I guess kind of like a political party in the late 1800s, early 1900s in America. And I'm not saying it's libertarian, but think of how libertarianism has kind of arisen. That's maybe how these groups come up, that, you know, a bunch of people come together and then all of a sudden you've got enough people for a movement.
As did two other political groups, the populists and the socialists. After the Civil War, many Americans returned to or began farming. But over the next decades, there was an overproduction of farm goods. With more supply than demand, prices plummeted lower and lower. At the same time, the cost of seed, fertilizer, and railroad transportation increased, leaving more and more farmers little money to support their families and still pay their debts to bankers. In protest, farmers began to organize political parties. Of them, the Populist Party emerged as the most powerful. The populists supported an income tax based on earnings to support the government rather than the tariffs then charged to farmers and businesses. They demanded a shorter workday, government loans to farmers, the direct election of state senators, secret ballot voting, and other election reforms. But Republican William McKinley defeated the populist-supported presidential candidate, Democrat William Jennings Bryan, in 1896. Populist Party, if not its causes, faded.
All right, that's a populist party. Populism in general is the idea that, I guess you would call it the workers, or you would call it the, kind of this mass of a mass of people in a country, in a democracy, had arisen and demanded certain rights or certain, basically looking to reform things. So there's a couple of different uses, like many of the words, important political words that we have. There is the current use, and then there's the origin of them. So populism, now William Jennings Bryan himself was a brilliant and a very interesting study, which I might mention tomorrow. I believe he ran for president 4 times and was involved in a lot of the important debates of the day, and had a famous speech that he gave called The Cross of Gold. Now, let's see here. I want to get into for you real quick, I guess Rand Paul is the flavor of the day. The debate is over whether Obamacare is dead. Now, if Obamacare, let me say it this way, Obamacare is dead, the repeal and replacement appears to be on life support. It appears to have been born in on life support. So if it can't pass the CBO and half the Republicans hate it, I don't see how it can make it. But here's a little bit from Rand Paul on this. Obamacare is probably the big fight right now, the repeal and replacement.
Speaker of the House Paul Ryan says the American Health Care Act is the right way to repeal and replace Obamacare. Here he is today making the pitch. Lower costs, more choices, not less. Patients in control, universal access to care. These are the 4 driving principles that we are focused on. Lowering the costs, giving people more choices, having patients in control, and universal access to care. Let me walk you through how exactly we propose to do this.
The speaker insists he can get the bill through Congress, but apparently a lot of Republican senators did not get that memo. The biggest critic is Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who says the bill is dead on arrival and will destroy the party in 2020 if it's passed. Senator Paul joins us now. It's good to see you.
Well, you know, he left out a few things in the press conference. He left out that he keeps the Obamacare taxes for a year. Then he keeps the Cadillac tax forever. He keeps the Obamacare subsidies, but renames them, you know, tax credits. He keeps the individual mandate, but you don't pay the government the penalty. You got to pay the insurance company the penalty. And then he also.
They would say there's a transition.
Well, no, I mean, but he's keeping aspects of Obamacare. That's the very definition of Obamacare life.
So it's not a full repeal, is your point?
No, it's not. And about a year ago, we did. We voted unanimously a year ago. Why aren't we voting on what we voted a year ago?
But I've spoken to House Republicans, and they told me to ask you this simple question. You want to repeal it. What happens after that? You do a full repeal. They say the market collapses,
right,
and you really do have a death spiral. And then you, Senator Paul, you own that death spiral.
Yeah, no, I'm for replacing at the same time.
But how do you replace it immediately, though?
Well, in a separate bill. I've written the bill. And the bill is, interestingly, mostly Tom Price's ideas. So it's interesting you have Paul Ryan on one side saying, I have Tom Price's ideas. And then you have Rand Paul on the other side saying, I have Tom Price's idea. And it's kind of true. We don't like the refundable tax credits that came from Tom Price, but we do like health care associations where you can join like a buying pool or a group to bring down prices. This is part of the answer because the 11 million people in the individual market, their premiums are going through the roof. So you got to let them join a buying pool.
But House Republicans say the premiums are going to spike even more once you repeal it altogether.
Well, that's why you replace it. And what you replace it with are market reforms.
Okay.
We get rid of the mandates, which I think Paul Ryan would agree with. You expand health savings accounts, and then you expand healthcare associations. These associations are like co-ops or buying pools.
All great ideas, but House Republicans also tell me that you can't get to 60 votes with that. So it's not going to go anywhere.
You know, I can't be blamed if somebody won't vote for something. It's just not a bad idea.
But how do you bring Democrats in, is their point, to get to 60 votes?
Well, we have to convince people that it's a good idea, and we bring it forward. But the problem is they've brought forward things that are very controversial and that conservatives don't like. Conservatives hate their bill. I promise you, Obamacare Lite, dead on arrival. They might as well just start over. You're hearing other voices. I'm not the only voice saying this. And so what they should do is...
All right, so here's another voice. Tom Cotton, who's become an extremely important senator. He's from Arkansas. He was in the military, and he's a true conservative from what I understand.
Cotton, thank you for joining us this morning. I know you were listening to Director Mulvaney right there. He says this is just a framework. This is a framework for repeal and replace. You're going to have the chance to fix it in the Senate. Can this bill be fixed?
George, the bill probably can be fixed, but it's going to take a lot of carpentry on that framework. As it's written today, this bill in the House of Representatives cannot pass the Senate, and I believe it would have adverse consequences for millions of Americans, and it wouldn't deliver on our promises to reduce the cost of health insurance for Americans. So I would say to my friends in the House of Representatives with whom I serve, do not walk the plank and vote for a bill that cannot pass the Senate and then have to face the consequences of that vote. George, you were in the White House in 1993. You remember when House Democrats voted for a BTU energy tax. Not only did that not become law, it didn't even get a vote in the Senate. And many of those Democrats lost their next election because they voted on that tax.
So you're
calling getting BTU'd. I just do not think that this bill can pass the Senate. And therefore, I think the House should take a pause and try to get as close as we can to a good result before they send it to the Senate.
So you're saying House Republicans, if they vote for this bill, are going to pay the price without getting any benefit?
I'm afraid that if they vote for this bill, they're going to put the House majority at risk next year. And we have majorities in the House and the Senate and the White House, not only to repeal Obamacare and get health care reform right, but to reform our taxes and our regulations and build up our military and accomplish many other things. And I don't want to see the House majority put at risk on a bill that is not going to pass the Senate. That's why.
All right. So there is from Tom Cotton, a very influential, a guy that's influential to Donald Trump. Now, here is from Dana Loesch, radio talk show host and conservative commentator. You know, that's the great thing about this country, including talk radio, is, you know, a person who's on the radio, I guess they have a constituency, the people that listen, but they're not voted in, and they don't have to struggle in this mass of other politicians and have to compromise. They can talk more freely about things, and the spoken word format is like nothing else in America. Here's Dana Loesch on Paul Ryan's Obamacare plan, giving a middle finger to the American people and Trump.
Opposition from some conservatives over Republicans, their new health care plan, it's not letting up. And now some are wondering about the impact it could have on the Trump presidency. Republican Senator Rand Paul is one of the most vocal critics. He says the fight is not about the president.
When you say, look, it's not a binary choice, you don't have my vote, Mr. Speaker,
right,
you might imperil the Trump presidency.
Well, no, not at all.
I'm
a big friend of the president.
And also,
you won't meet anybody who dislikes Obamacare more than me. I'm a physician. I have lived Obamacare. It is a disaster.
All right, let's talk about it with Dana Lash, a nationally syndicated radio talk show host. Good to see you, Dana.
Nice to see you, Shannon. Thanks
all
for
right,
having me.
You had a bit of a Twitter storm. You've been letting us know how you feel about this bill and how it's going down, and saying basically you
right.
think that the Republicans are risking the midterms in 2018 if they don't get this right. How much danger is there?
I do. I think there's a lot of danger there, Shannon. And I want to reiterate, too, what Senator Paul said. But I want to take it a step further. I think it's an insult. It's an insult to the American people, and it's an insult to the Trump administration for Republicans, congressional Republicans, to deliver this bill to his desk. They are the ones who are endangering this new administration, and I can't bold, italicize, underline that anymore. In 2015, Jim Jordan had a fantastic bill that went way further than anything that this bill's doing, and it actually lowered prices instead of increasing prices, which is what this Obamacare 2.0 bill does, and I don't know why, for the life of me, they will not go back to that because it was already on the floor. This is a swamp monster. If people are going to talk about draining the swamp, this is literally the creature from the Black Lagoon, this Obamacare 2.0 bill. The exact Obamacare regulatory structure is still in place. The penalty that is must be paid to insurance companies is there. And for all of the awful things that were in Obamacare, one at least wise thing that Democrats did was include some cost controls, albeit nobody liked the method in which they did it. But now in this Obamacare 2.0 bill, Republicans did away with all of that. So the it could actually end up costing exponentially more than what the original Obamacare bill did, Shannon. And I think, you know, this isn't about President Trump, and I think there's a lot of great things that he's done just in his first month in office. But for Republicans to deliver something like this to his desk, I'll just say it. It's a giant middle finger to America. It's a giant middle finger to this Trump administration. And we did not protest in the streets for 8 years to get Obamacare light. And so they better think long and hard before they try to walk something like this up to the Resolute desk.
All right. Well, it is there currently. Senator.
All right, so let's take a little break here. We'll come back and, man, there's just so much stuff to cover. I'm going to cover the populism tomorrow. I've got a great story for you in terms of controversy. Now, here is the statement. Stephen King, representative, warns that our civilization can't be restored with somebody else's babies. Now, everybody knows that we don't replicate, we don't reproduce at a big enough rate to build our country. If it wasn't for people coming in from outside, our population would be falling. Having said that, Stephen King says you cannot restore our civilization. Let's put it right on the line here. You can't restore it with Syrians. You can't restore it with Africans. You can't restore it with Mexicans. I mean, that's the implication here. What do you think about that? And 523-1450 to call in 805-6180. Controversial to say the least. We'll be right back. 523-1450, 805-6180. Now, here's a statement, if you like. The people that are Mexican that live here are different than the people who are Mexican who come over the border. And the reason that is that if you're here and you're living, you begin to understand what the government is like as opposed to here. You begin to understand what the police are like and the system and the way things are done. And I would say that, you know, the American system is a lot more interactive. It's a lot more would have a tendency, obviously, to be the a place where you would want to live. And I think people coming from Mexico are a lot of times victims of the government. And so anyway, here's a larger claim. can you take people from outside of the country and build a civilization? That's the question. Here's Steve King.
This week you made some headlines of your own.
I can't see this coming.
You questioned the contribution of non-white people in the country, and I'll just quote what you said here. Uh-huh. This old white people business does get a little tired. I'd ask you to go back through history and figure out where are these contributions that have been made by these other categories of people that you're talking about? Where did any other subgroup of people contribute more to civilization?
Right.
What did you mean by those remarks, and is that not identity politics?
It is. This needs to be understood. What never gets reported in the press, or hasn't, as I looked at the clippings that have come down on this, is what Charlie Pierce said before that I was responding to. And we were sitting there in a panel at MSNBC, and he said, this is the last Republican convention where old white people will have anything to say about the policy that comes out of the convention. Now, that's disparaging a group of people, and old white people. Can you trade that language out by adding any other group in there as an adjective? And by the way, I am wise enough not to even do that for people, because then it blows the whole Twittersphere up again. But he was disparaging a group of people, a subgroup of people, old white people, and saying they're going to be out of the politics of the Republican Party. That's got to be answered. If you're sitting here as a seated member of Congress on a national television show and asked to swallow something like that and curl up again, no other group of people would take that. And by the way, no person that I know of in the media or in public life would turn that around the other way and have made that assertion to anybody sitting on that panel. And by the way, Charlie Pierce is not a young white guy. So what I pointed out is this, that Western civilization is the most successful civilization the world has ever seen. And some of the reasons for that is it's borrowed the best of the cultures along the way, back to Mosaic law, the Greek age of reason, Roman law and the Roman order of government and the Republican form of government, by the way, that were guaranteed in our Constitution. The foundation of our ideological thought is rooted in the Enlightenment in Europe. And then this country was born at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution with that thought process and that coming over here to this country like a giant petri dish that was created for America to burst up onto the scene in the world. And we did a lot with that. And so, yes, any civilization, you can look down through that. So these are things that we're not proud of. And I could go back and give you that list. But the sum total that's been contributed by Western civilization, it surpasses any other culture or civilization, partly because we borrowed from them along the way and we're flexible enough to do that. And so I don't think we should apologize for our success and the idea of multiculturalism in that every culture is equal. That's not objectively true, and we've been fed that information for the last 25 years in this country, and we're not going to continue to become a greater nation if we don't look at this objectively. So,
I think without even getting into the racial aspects of that, it's objectively true that whatever we've done in America is greater than any civilization in the past, and there's a reason for it, and part of that, I think, is absolutely true. If you think about the way that other cultures come to America and traditionally joined the melting pot, but they always had their additions to make to the culture, whether it was musical, artistic, scientific, cooking, cuisine, I mean, all these different things. And now we've got this attempt by the far left to create a permanent racial and cultural war, and the losers of this are white people, but the real losers are Americans. And Frankie lashing out against, here's my, he calls him a kook. Here's my problem. Frankie is a white, an old white man. I mean, what is it? What is this with the far left, this like suicide cult mentality where they've got to admit that what a terrible place America is and how we've wronged the world and how especially white people, especially old white men, have attacked the world. I mean, it's sickening to hear this stuff. And that's part of it. The other part is an attempt to apply Christianity, Judaism and Christianity, this culture that arose out. And also, obviously, Greek and Roman, but that's this idea is we took the best of whatever it was that along the way and gathered it up and preserved it. The idea of the classics is one point, but now we're supposed to basically commit hara-kiri so that some idiot who wants to start a race war feels happy. Well, anyway, here's just to lighten the mood a little bit. Here is Ivan Dekker on Dinosaurs, a little comedy for you.
You can probably tell by my face and haircut that when I was a child, I was very interested in dinosaurs. That was my main thing. We all had that kid in our class who was like, I know all the dinosaurs. And we're like, yeah, we don't care. We're picking teams for kickball. Shut up already. It was me. I was that kid. And teachers always use it as a justification. Like, they were on my side. They were like, Ivan's really smart. He knows all the dinosaurs. He's probably going to be a scientist. And they were way off. Looking back now, I was like, I was a child. I was not interested in dinosaurs because I wanted to be a scientist. I was interested in dinosaurs because I wanted to be a dinosaur. There were 2 full days when I pretended to be a velociraptor at school. No one stopped me. I was just walking around doing this. But I believe them. I thought I was going to move on and eventually start to study dinosaurs. But the further along you get in dinosaur science, like once you get to college, you realize pretty boring. Not a lot of dinosaurs involved. It's mostly puzzles. It's like, hey, do you like dinosaurs? Love them. Great. Do you like puzzles? Not as much. Here's what it's going to be like if you want to study dinosaurs. Get a puzzle, throw away all the edge pieces, then flip it over and try to do the brown cardboard side. Also, throw in a bunch of pieces from other puzzles. That needs to be in there, too. Sometimes you'll find a bone and you won't even know that it's not a bone. It'll be a rock the whole time. And you'll be like, oh, great. Good thing I dusted it for a year. Here's something you may not know about dinosaurs. Most of the time, they don't even find the whole dinosaur. Very rarely do they find all the bones. Sometimes they find one bone. Like I found a leg bone, but I drew the whole dinosaur anyway. That's what I think it looked like. I put tiger stripes on it because I'm a scientist. It's weird, right? Like, they're just trying to add so many dinosaurs to the mix. There's too many dinosaurs now. It's gotten out of hand. It's like Pokemon. We only need 5, the top 5 dinosaurs. Go buy a bag of dinosaur fruit snacks. Those are the 5. Fruit snacks are the who's who of Dino Land. We got T-Rex, Pterodactyl, Stegosaurus, Triceratops, Brontosaurus. That's it. Those are the 5. You don't need more. Stop it. Like, they don't even find, they find an incomplete dinosaur. Just leave it on the maybe pile. You don't have to decide what's missing. Wait till you find the whole one. Just have 5 dudes sitting around like, we didn't find a head. What do you guys think it had up there? I think it probably had a beak. Yeah, I like that. Pretty good. Pretty sure it had a beak, too. We're all agreeing on beak. Great. Let's call Germany to make sure they're on board. Hey, Germany, we're going with a beak on this one. Ja, das Beacon. Perfect. Everybody take the rest of the week off. We're scientists.
All right. A little bit of Ivan Dekker there. Okay. So thanks for tuning in. Sorry about the first hour. It was obliterated by a complete collapse of the system, which was rebooted and rebuilt itself. Isn't that great? You have a problem with your computer, it freezes up, it starts to smoke, you turn it off and reboot it, it's brand new again. But all right, so we did cover some of the wiretap story, and the idea that Trump was wiretapped is not as crazy as some people think. And tomorrow I'm going to get into, I'm going to get into the issue of populism, even for you, Frankie. And here he is. Trumper is so going to get smacked upside his orange head. Lol. King is a con kook. I'm not old. Cons are old. Cruds and loonies. Frankie, poor Frankie. He lost his mojo when Hillary went down in flames. Just say Yeah, I'm a right-wing Christian patriot and flip your Samsung TV to the bird. That's from yesterday and or last week. Frankie is an old bitter man. Pray for him. Where there is life, there is hope. Frankie, is there any life in that noodle of yours? Thanks for tuning in. Well, have a great day. We'll meet you back in 22 hours. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Ciao.
Check out Guitar George. He knows all the chords. Learn strictly rhythm. He doesn't want to make it cry or sing. This brand new guitar is all you can afford. When he gets up under the light, play his bass.